Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, episode number 98 with Mark Podolsky, a.k.a. The Land Geek, on investing in raw land. I'm Dan Breslin, host of the REI Diamond Show, and I was personally excited when Mark's booking agent reached out to me to get him on the show for a few reasons. First, Mark is a fellow podcaster, The Land Geek, with a value-add mentality when it comes to his audience and his network. In other words, he shares valuable insights on his own show and also today on REI Diamond Show. And second, we are discussing land investment, and not necessarily land in expensive and competitive infill markets like Chicago, Atlanta, or Philadelphia, where I buy property, but in less populated, easier to buy areas, harder to access areas, located primarily in the Sunbelt states and maybe up in the Northwest United States. We're talking about parcels of land with no utilities, not much population, and not much conventional use, as far as I could tell. But as Mark reveals on this episode, there's actually a ton of value in these deals, to the tune of 300 to 1,000% for the investor. I'm sure you're ready to hear about that, so let's jump right in. And welcome to the show, Mr. Mark Podolsky. How are you doing today?
Dan Breslin, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much. My pulse is normal. My respiration's fine, properly caffeinated. I'm excited.
All right, that makes two of us. I've been excited. I don't know if some of the listeners may not know, but we have a form and people can fill out an application to become a guest. And I'm not sure if it was you or the booking agent that had done that, but once I saw that one come through, I was excited because we were talking about a topic of interest to me personally. And I know that some of my listeners know, but the reason I do these podcasts, Mark, in case you don't know, is first, it's development of my own mind and my own skills. And I really enjoy the conversations with the guests, and I treat this like my own mentoring program, although it would be a bit scattered with some of the topics we jump around to. But, you know, when I saw land investment come in, I said, oh, this is great. This is something I've seen these deals advertised. I've seen people working these type of leads. I've heard great stories about land investment deals along the way. And I've done a handful of lot deals and, you know, small acreage deals, but never really had a deep discussion or took any courses or did any other additional reading on these land deals. So I'm excited to have you come on the show. And I guess I'll give you the floor to kind of talk about how you got started in real estate and what the business looks like today, if you have a Reader's Digest version of all of that info, Mark.
Yeah. I mean, the way I got started was kind of interesting because it was just out of like pain and suffering of a day job. So because I had never done real estate before that, I was working as an investment banker, working with private equity groups, doing mergers and acquisitions. And mid-market stuff, you know, 5 to 500 million in enterprise value. And I had a 45-minute commute to work and back. You know, we had long hours. I was micromanaged. It was really miserable, actually. And it got so bad for me, Dan, that I wouldn't get the Sunday blues anticipating Monday coming around. I'd get the Friday blues anticipating the weekend going by really fast and having to be back at work on Monday. So my firm hires this guy, and he's telling me that on the side, as like a side hustle, he's going to these tax deed auctions, and he's buying up raw land, pennies on the dollar, and he's flipping them online, and he's making an average return on his investment of 300%. So, Dan, you know, I'm looking at companies all day long, and a great company has 15% EBITDA margins. Or free cash flow. Great company. Average company is at 10%. And I'm looking at companies all day long, less than 10%. So I really don't believe them. And I've got $3,000 saved up for car repairs. And I take that money and I just go to New Mexico with him. I do exactly what he says to do. I buy 10 half acre parcels at an average price of $300 each. I put them up online. They all sell in the next 30 days. At an average price of over $1,200, 300%. It worked. So I took all that money and I went to another tax deed auction in Arizona where I live. And again, this is year 2000. There's no one there. And I'm buying up lots. I'm buying up acreage for nothing. And over the next 6 months, I sold all that property and I made over $92,000. And so I said to my wife, I'm like, honey, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to invest in raw land full time. And she said, absolutely not. So I said, okay, fine. She's pregnant at the time. So I worked land investing for 18 months until the land investing income exceeded the investment banking income. And then I quit and I've been doing it full time ever since.
That's a wild ride. I know we're going to talk about some automation and freeing us up and stuff like that. I get a different kind of Sunday blues these days, Mark. And that's like yesterday was Easter Sunday. You know, we did kind of the family thing, went to the theater, and I didn't do anything on the business. And I felt dissatisfied that I did not work at the end of the day.
Well, look, I mean, you know, that means you're not really working, right? That you know, when you love what you do, that's not work. That's just joy. I feel the same way. Like, I can't wait to get to do what I do.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. It's hopping on the phone, being on the computer, making phone calls. It gets my, you know, juices moving because I love just putting together deals and analyzing the values of things. And I'm sure a lot of people feel this way about a lot of different professions, but I remember I always thought that real estate investment, once I found it, I was like, oh my God, everybody's going to want to do this. This is a huge problem. I just assumed everybody thought like, you know, we think out here in the real estate thing, but I learned that's not the case for everybody. Cool. So that was an interesting start, Mark. And obviously, or I'm going to guess, I don't know if it's obvious, but since 2000 and doing those first $92,000 in deals, I had imagined that competition had changed. We had the market go up, the market go down, the market go back up again in that course of time. So how did the business develop and evolve? What does it look like today in the 2018 April market that we happen to be in now?
Right. So right now, the market's really pretty great in the sense of equilibrium, right? So, you know, when I mean equilibrium, that means that it's easy to buy and it's easy to sell. So if we rewind the tape, when I first started, it was really, really easy. It was really nice equilibrium, let's say, from 2001 to 2004. Now, 2005, the market started heating up. It wasn't so great to get those buys anymore, right? The prices kept going up. 2006, prices kept going up. And so, yeah, it was still sort of easy to sell, but it was hard to buy. 2008 comes around, really tough to sell, but a great time to buy, right? People needed money. And so today we got a nice equilibrium. It's, you know, we're buying every day and we're selling every day. And so that part is really nice. I do like the idea of we're coming to an end of a real estate cycle, and I can't wait for it, right? And pick up those deals again, like we were doing in 2009-10. But I don't see it slowing down yet. Do you?
No, I mean, that's the same thing. We have an economist, a friend of mine, Paul Sloat, who comes on. I bring him on our show 4 times a year now. We were doing it every month, but we slowed it down to the quarter so that it'd be enough time for, you know, market data to develop. And we just discuss often, Mark, we talk about the millennial population getting to the home buying age. And, you know, if you evaluate the 2004, 5, 6, 7, et cetera, we had baby boomers coming to an age where they were buying the McMansions. We also had the easy money and easy credit that really helped fuel the bubble. But a lot of the bubble itself, if we look back at, you know, even what vacant areas and what large developments were started, we were talking about 3,500 square foot houses in a lot of America, at least that I've evaluated, that's like now sitting empty or is very hard to sell because those same baby boomers who bought in the 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8 era now have the kids moved out of those large houses, went to college, and we kind of have a dip in the population age of people who would have the college age kids who are buying all those properties. So we have like no demand. So if I evaluate my opinion and what we've talked about here on our show a lot, what's going to drive the market to continue in its equilibrium currently, at least in my opinion, and why I would say we're not in for the type of crash we saw at the last go around is we don't have the easy money and the easy credit and, you know, the fraudulent loans that were being made in that era. And we do have the demand of people who are going to be buying and continuing to buy probably for the next 3 years, maybe even as long as 5 years, the single family houses in the starter price range. So anything, you know, 200, 250, it could be $100,000, $150,000 houses. We see in Chicago on the south side, a lot of the neighborhoods that just didn't come back. We're finally starting to see some reasonable appreciation where people can go in, like myself, and invest money, you know, renovating properties in neighborhoods where the numbers wouldn't work 3 years ago. So we're seeing like those lower priced homes come up. And I would wager, I don't have the exact data for every neighborhood, but at a macro level, I'd wager that that's the age of the home buyer who's now, you know, the millennial who was driving the apartment home growth for so long, starting to get married, have kids, and, you know, even them that are single starting to buy houses and just reaching that home buying age. So I think we're going to remain strong. I'm definitely not a sky is falling and we're, you know, reaching these record breaking prices. In some markets, we will probably see some fall off just from the unsustainable amount. But, you know, in any market, there's always good and bad areas that you'd want to watch out for or know about, whichever worked in your benefit. That's kind of where I'm at.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it doesn't feel like the Big Short movie era, right? You see the movie The Big Short?
No.
Read the book?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. He talks all about that time and the people that saw the real estate bubble coming and, you know, bet against housing and how they did it. And, you know, the signature loans and the guys in the strip club, and he's talking to the strippers.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've got five homes. It's like, you have five homes? And he's like, I'm betting against the market.
That was all it took. Yeah, it was a wild era. I mean, I remember seeing the loans getting done and there's people putting $30,000 repair credits and, you know, $50,000 repair credits and are getting the appraisals to come in $50,000 higher. And we're not talking about $800,000 loans. We're talking about a house that should be worth $200,000, the appraiser calling $250,000 and then kicking $50,000 back to the buyer. I mean, I had witnessed closings like that. And knew of many of those kind of scenarios going on in the Philadelphia market during that era. And it's just a false inflation of the market when you have that kind of collusion going on. But, yeah, The Big Short, if anybody did not check that out, is interested in figuring out why the bubble blew up, or at least a big driving factor, why it was what it was and why it was such a historical event. It's definitely a movie worth checking out. It's a good call, Mark.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, what is it today, right? So we had all those ups and downs, and we had the bubbles. So, like, where are you making money today, and what does your company, Frontier Properties, basically focus on? Where's the 80-20, you know, rule? Where's the 80% of the income coming from now, if, in fact, that is the case?
Right. So I'm an inch wide and a mile deep. So let me walk you through my model, and we'll just kind of do this together so it's really clear exactly what I do. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so Dan, where do you live?
I am in Chicago. I do business in Chicago, Miami, Tampa, Philadelphia, and Atlanta. So any of those markets are going to have a lot of our listeners and also frame of references.
Okay, but you personally reside in Chicago, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I look at the the tax delinquent list in a county in Texas. And I say, oh my gosh, Dan Breslin owes $200 on this 10-acre parcel in Texas. But you live in Chicago. So you're advertising to me two things. Number one, you have no emotional attachment to that raw land, right? And number two, you're distressed in some way because you owe back taxes. And they're not much, right? Like $200. So something's going on with you with that property. So what I'll do is I'll look at the comparable sales for the last 12 to 18 months. And then I'll simply divide by four. And when I divide by four, that gets me to what Warren Buffett would call a 300% margin of safety. And I'll send you an offer for that property. So let's say for that 10 acres, the comps are 10 grand and I offer them $2,500. And you're like, well, I owe $200 in back taxes. I've never seen the property. You'll take the 2,500, right? So now in reality, 3 to 5% of people will accept this quote unquote top dollar offer, right? So now you accept the offer of $2,500. Now I've got to determine, do I really want to buy this property? So we have to go through our due diligence checklist. Number one, I got to make sure you actually own the property, right? Number two, I've got to confirm that the back taxes are only $200. Number three, I've got to confirm there's no liens or encumbrances on that property. Number four, I've got to determine that there's been no breaks in the chain of title, right? And we go down the line, ingress and egress, legal access, what's compelling about the property. And then everything checks out, and then I send you a check, Dan, for $2,500. And now I own the property. So I have a built-in best buyer. And this is where it gets really interesting. And this is how I sell property in 30 days or less. Do you know who my built-in best buyer is?
One of the neighboring parcels, maybe?
Exactly. The neighbors. You got it. The neighbors.
Nice.
So I send out neighbor letters. And I say, look, before I go to the open market, here is your opportunity to expand your holdings, protect your privacy, protect your view. Right? So oftentimes the neighbors will buy it. Now, if they pass, we'll go to our buyers list. If the buyers list passes, we'll go to a little website you probably never heard of called Craigslist. And using software and automation, I can put out about 120 ads by pressing a button. Right? I can do the same thing on another little website you've probably never heard of called Facebook. So between those platforms, and then there's Lands of America, there's landandfarm.com, landmoto.com, landhub.com, and the lands. I'll sell this property in 30 days or less. But the way that I sell it is really special. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a piece of raw land and I'm going to make it cash flow just like a rental home. So what I'm going to do, Dan, is I'm going to sell your property. I'm going to find another buyer. Let's say it's the neighbors. And I'll sell it for $2,500 down. And then I'm going to make it a car payment. Let's say $449 a month at 9% interest over the next 8 years, right? So now what I've done is I've gotten my capital out on the down payment, and I've created a cash flow for myself of $449 a month over the next 8 years. Now I don't have to deal with any renters, any renovations, rehabs, or rodents. And because I'm not dealing with a tenant, I'm exempt from Dodd-Frank, RESPA, and the SAFE Act. So the game that we play then is, can we create enough of these notes where our passive income exceeds our fixed expenses, and then we're working because we want to, not because we have to. Does that make sense?
It does, Mark. So that was what you did 9 years ago, was put together enough of these seller-held finance deals to exceed consistently? Is that how you convinced the wife to allow you to quit the job?
So when I first started, I just flipped, cash. And
okay.
Then I started to see, like, this is a lot of hard work. And every time I sell a piece of property, I'm starting over again. So how can I, you know, do what all my buddies are doing that are landlords without the headaches? And that's when I started doing owner financing. I started owner financing in 2007.
Okay, cool. So I have two questions here written down. One burning question I know a lot of people may or may not have actually caught, but you mentioned these automation softwares or websites for two sites, Facebook and Craigslist. Would you be able to point us in the direction of where to obtain that ourselves, or is that like a script that you have written and built custom that might be available?
No, you can go to postingdomination.com/thelandgeek. And it's actually a course that teaches you step-by-step how to create the automation, where to get the software, Craigslist auto poster, where to buy the VPN, a Boost mobile phone. It's a whole step-by-step process, and it's updated constantly because Craigslist algorithm is constantly updating. So that's the best place to go. My partner, Scott Todd, created that course.
Okay, cool. And then the next one is, who are the people buying? What's the avatar for this 10-acre parcel in Texas? And could you give us some background on a lot of this land? Like, I'd imagine that we're talking about probably recreation land and non-buildable if we're talking about $10,000 for 10 acres, or, you know, big vacant patches of barren land, or are we talking about areas where someday growth comes in and these are significantly more valuable parcels?
It just depends. I would say our bread and butter is going to be the first scenario. You've got raw recreational land. There's no utilities, and it's just very vacant and very inexpensive. So the value is not that high, and the property taxes aren't that high. But there's a lust for land in this country that I don't think most people realize. And so, you know, in a way, I sort of call it man jewelry, where people want to just own this land because it makes them feel good. I've got a guy, he's a CEO in San Diego. He invests $5,000 a month every month with me for years and years. And he's just buying up all this raw land all throughout the country. And I'm like, Don, you've ever gone out and looked at his property? He's like, no. I'm like, what are you doing with it? He's like, I just think it's cool. He's like, my banker loves it. He's like, my balance sheet's amazing. So, you know, some people like to do that. Some people like a legacy investment. Because, you know, as Ted Turner would say, you know, buy raw land. It's the only thing that lasts, right? So it's going to outlive all of us. And a lot of preppers like to buy this raw land. So these are people that are hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. I've got a big military contingent. So these are people that know how to sort of survive on that property as well. And they don't like people. So not the military don't like people, but that's another contingent. There's people that just don't like people. And they want to go out and they want to just, you know, have a place to go to. Some people like to hunt. Some people like to fish. Some people like to camp. It's incredible. But, you know, when we make it irresistible by making it a car payment, it just flies off the shelf. You know, I've been doing this full time since 2001. I've done over 5,200 deals, and I've never been stuck with a raw piece of land.
Yeah, that's interesting. Are there any success stories? Like, this guy is investing $5,000 a month. He's buying all of these parcels and probably a random scattering of states and municipalities. Does he ever hit a lottery ticket where the land suddenly becomes valuable? Do you ever hear any stories where, you know, you feel Mark, you're like, man, I gave that one away. I wish I would have known XYZ was coming through there. I mean, does that ever happen, or is this pretty much unusable land besides the limited uses you just described?
Yeah, it does happen, but typically when I find something in the path of growth, I'll just put it in my trust and I won't sell it. So I'll just hold it for the kid. Yeah. So oftentimes, you know, we know when we're buying it and going through due diligence that we're in the path of growth. So that those types of deals don't happen. So yeah, I mean, it's usually just properties that are very inexpensive. And you know, there's a highest and best use for every piece of raw land. Like, you know, you're saying they're unusable, but like, we've sold property like swamp land. You can grow shiitake mushrooms. I sold some 5-acre parcels in Colorado, and it's just, you know, like, you wouldn't want to buy it, but this guy couldn't wait to buy it because he told me there's rattlesnakes on that land and he hunts rattlesnakes. And then his buddy called me up the next day and said, hey, I heard, you know, Jerry just bought 5 acres from you in Colorado. He's like, I want the adjoining lot. I'm like, great. So it's, you know, there's no accounting for taste. There literally is a pig for every barn.
Yeah, you'll have to forgive me for my, you know, poking at and looking for the value in the deal. That's just where my mind works and goes to. And I'm always looking for the growth and the gentrification tracks in the cities that I invest. So not to come off like we're selling unusable land, I guess it's just that these are unimaginable uses to me before our conversation, Mark. It is so interesting that someone wants to own the land, just like you said, to hunt rattlesnakes. And I heard of a guy that bought some swamp land in Florida that was like, I don't know, 5-acre, basically a drainage pit, undevelopable land that this guy wanted to buy. And it was in the middle of civilization, so there was stuff everywhere. But the guy wanted to ride his ATVs around, and he could do that on this, like, whatever it was, a 5-acre parcel that he ended up buying. So, you know, these are non-conforming uses, certainly, but valuable to the right person.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, one of the main reasons why our niche is so non-competitive, because if you go to a RIA meeting, And there's 100 people at that meeting. 99 of them are going to be either landlords, house flippers, or wholesalers. You and I, Dan, would be the only land guys in that room. And the reason is, it's so not sexy, right? You're not going to go on HGTV or the DIY network and see flip this land. It's just me in front of my computer. It's like the least sexy niche there is. So, you know, if you go to a party and someone asks you what you do, like, oh, I flip raw land, I sell raw land, they're like, oh. And then they're going to go, okay, thank you. Like, that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah. No one even knows what the...
Yeah, they're like, well, they don't even know the next question. It's like, oh, that's nice. You buy dirt. So,
yeah. Mark, what are the sources? Is it just the vacant and the tax list? Are you basically mailing everybody with these large parcels, or do you ever stumble upon someone in the REIA meeting that brings you a deal?
Yeah, so you know the deal sources are varied. You know, typically your lowest hanging fruit is what we talked about in the beginning, where you get the delinquent tax list, people who owe back taxes and live out of state. Once you start getting deals and you pick off all that low-hanging fruit, then you just go to the assessor and you get the entire tax roll of all real property in that county that is bearing fruit. And then from there, you scrub that list. You get rid out of the commercial and the residential and the industrial property. And you can sort by use code, which would typically be VL, vacant land. Now you've got all the vacant land parcels. Then you sort one more time by acreage. And then you do your pricing from there, divide by four, and then you send out your offers. And that way, you know, you don't send an offer to somebody that has, 40 acres, the same, offer as 5 acres, because that 40-acre person is going to send you glitter back in the mail, right? So, you know, that is the best source of deal flow, is going to be getting those properties before that person goes, to a tax deed or tax lien auction. Oftentimes, you know, the more you've been doing this, you'll find that there's always people that can lock up the deal, but then they don't actually have the cash to close the deal, and they'll wholesale out deals to you. And because our margins are so fat, 300% to 1,000%, they can mark it up 100%, and, you know, the retailer is very happy. So there's all types of, land communities that you can always find wholesalers. I mean, essentially, the real work and the real, you know, business, if we're going to get down to it, is mailing and marketing, right? And just locking up that deal. I mean, I don't care what you do. You buy any asset, 25, 30 cents on the dollar, they're selling on the other end of that deal.
Yeah, you're right about that. Mark, how many, we're going to talk about some of the automation you do now, but like, give us an idea of what the machine is producing now, 18 years or whatever it was in the business. How many deals are cooking at any given time, or how many do you see a month, or whatever the metric is that you would look at yourself and say, oh man, this is a really good month. I did this.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is a deal a day. And, all I do is I look at numbers and then I ruin someone's day on our team, right? So I just break stuff. So I've gotten to the point where, you know, I want to see how many offers went out that week or month. Usually I'll look at it on a weekly basis. How many offers went out that week? How many deals are pending? How many deals did we buy, and how many deals did we sell? And as long as that number consistently goes up, you know, I'm happy. The problem with my team is after I've had a cup of coffee, I'll find a new marketing platform. I'm like, hey, have we tried this? Have we tried that? And then, you know, I have to break something for us to try a new way of either, you know, selling the property or, you know, finding a new way of buying. And that might be a little bit, more aggressive than what we're currently doing. So that's typically what my role is today. But when I first started, I did everything myself.
And how many markets right now do you limit yourself, if any, or?
Yeah, so Dan, nobody wakes up and thinks to themselves, boy, I'd really like some raw land in Iowa, right? Unless you live in Iowa. But if you have property in Florida, California, Nevada, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico. So basically a little bit in Oregon, Washington. So Northwest, Southwest, California, and Florida. These are areas that are growing. They're the sunshine states, and there's lots of inexpensive raw land available.
Gotcha. So it's not in anywhere in the U.S. There is a limit, and it's got to be in one of those, I don't know, states with sex appeal.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, you know, if you wanted to buy $1 million ranches, right, and you just wanted to, buy a ranch for $1 million and sell it for $2 million, right, that's going to be really tough to do because that rancher is going to go to a land broker, right? They're not going to sell it to you 30 cents on a dollar. You know, same thing with, like, if you wanted to buy Manhattan infill lots or San Francisco infill lots, yeah, you could do it, right? But it's going to be very, very
once
tough
in a while
to get a deal. I mean, once in a while. So, you know, that 80-20 rule always sort of, you know, impacts everything. So I want to focus on the places where I can get the most deals at the best price.
Cool. Do you have, other than our touching on postingdomination.com, are there any other automation techniques, systems that you're proud of, maybe you've implemented in the last year or two that you could share that might add some value to our listeners, Mark?
Yeah, so we created a proprietary software program called the LandGeek Proprietary Automated Software System. And essentially what it does is it automates our mailings, it automates our marketing, it automates our contracts. So let's just take the mailing piece, right? So what used to take me or my virtual assistant, you know, maybe a couple days to do, getting the paper, the envelopes, addressing the envelopes, stamping the envelopes, all that good stuff, now takes about a click of a button. So using a company called Lob.com, using their API, all we do is upload the list, and then it automates the deals go out. Then when they come back, we automate that piece. We've created a virtual assistant team in the Philippines. So we use our own virtual assistant team. We have an office there. So our team does our due diligence for us. It costs about $11. And then it's $5,000 or less. So it's $5,000 or more, we'll close their title, obviously. But, you know, for these smaller deals, we'll do the title ourselves. And then, so every aspect of the business has been automated. So it used to take me 20 minutes in contracts, a purchase sale agreement, a promissory note, and a land sale contract. Well, that's the other piece of this, is that there's no cost of foreclosure because we use land contracts. So the asset stays with me until they pay off their note. And if they default, then I keep all their payments and their down payment, and I just resell it. I get a new down payment and a new buyer, no cost of foreclosure. So all of that has been automated using the software program. And essentially, now 90% of the business has been automated. The other piece of this is called geekpay.io. And this is another software program that we created that automates getting payments from lenders and borrowers, from the borrowers to lenders. So it used to be there's like $30,000, really expensive bank level software programs that would, you know, sort of manage the amortization and the entire process of getting paid. So I looked at the market and I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. And so I just created it, and we hired a Silicon Valley developer, and geekpay.io automates getting paid the down payment and then the monthly payments via ACH. But the beauty of this is it does all the math, it does all the amortization, but it automates the notification, so I don't have to get on the phone and be like, hey, you know, your payment bounced, you're late. They get notified. And it just completely automates it. And we really lowered our default rate in half because we have a credit card as a backup on file. So if their ACH fails, it'll actually hit their credit card on file. So, you know, they really have to be broke if they don't have the ACH and the credit card both fail on that transaction. And then we kind of know. But GeekPay is tremendous. You know, and actually has other verticals besides land investing. I mean, you know, used car dealers can use it. Landlords could use it, even though they're not charging interest. But anyone that's, you know, private money guys, notes, you know, could all use the software. It's great. And we've made it so inexpensive and so easy to use because I wanted to solve my own pain points.
True enough. So that is basically like a mortgage servicing.
Exactly. It's like it's like mortgage servicing on just the transparency piece of it. So the borrower can log in, see their current balance, make a prepayment, and everything sort of gets automated. Every month, those payments flow through, and it's incredible. So it's like mortgage servicing, exactly. You upload paperwork into the program. I mean, it's completely transparent for lender and borrower.
Do you guys report to the credit bureaus yet for that system?
So we don't do that yet, because there isn't a need for it, because we don't personally need to do credit checks. Because again, there's no cost of foreclosure for us. So we don't mind if someone forecloses, but you know, that would be a pretty simple API to add.
The reason I've asked is, Mark, because I've done a handful of these deals where I have one waiting to close right now. I bought it for 20 grand. It was part of a package. I had to take this house. I could sell it for, you know, 25, maybe 20, maybe 30,000 because of the time of year that I'm in now. But I sold it for 45,000. She gave me 8,000 down and I'm holding a mortgage for 37,000 at 9% over 10 years, the same car payment. But, I always wondered on these deals, and I've probably done 10 of those deals, if that, altogether. But I always wondered, if you were to systematize that, could I potentially get a premium, a slight premium, maybe, than I'm even getting now, by offering to report that to the credit bureaus on behalf of, you know, my borrowers who are making payments. So not only are they, you know, making payments and enjoying my land or enjoying my property that was difficult for me to sell that I was able to sell at a premium, but they're also rebuilding their credit, which I know it could be a hot button for people who are in that situation already. That was the only reason I was curious.
Yeah, you absolutely could do that. Not a problem. But if you go to thelandgeek.com/geekpay, you can get your first note for free. So literally for free, you could manage that woman's note.
Nice. I like it. I will check that out. So our final topic I wanted to bring up and speak about before we wrap up here in a few minutes is multiple streams of income. So we touched on flipping the land right out. We also touched on payments. Are there any other things that we missed when we're doing these deals that listeners might want to know if flipping these land deals was something they wanted to get into?
Yeah, so you know, the multiple stream of income is really going to be, you know, do you want to be a freelancer or an entrepreneur, right? So a freelancer is somebody that trades time for money. And the entrepreneur is going to build something that's bigger than themselves. Well, the only way they can build something bigger than themselves is if they leverage their time and their money. And the way that they do that is through systems, automation, and delegation. So for me, and I know, like Dan, for you, the stream of income is simply, you know, created by volume and a team, right? That is working in the business so that you and I can work on the business and be the visionary. So, you know, in the land business, the only streams of income are going to be flipping, wholesaling, and creating notes. I think creating notes is going to be your best bet because essentially you get two bites of the apple. If you get the down payment out, you get your money out, and then you've got your capital back to redeploy, and now you've got this passive income stream coming in every single month. So, you know, a good example is Sean Rickman and Rachel Mueller. He was a software guy. She was working retail. And they started working in the land business, and their passive income exceeded their fixed expenses. They just quit their jobs, and now they're traveling around the world with their laptop, working in this business with a virtual mailbox and a virtual assistant team. So I would say that the real leverage in this business is that you can do it from anywhere. It's scalable, and you can really build it as big as you want to, and you can work on it as much or as little as you want to, but it can really move the needle in your life. But there's really no other multiple stream of income in that sense.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. The creating notes always has this allure to me. We ended up, I don't know, did like maybe $3.2 million in assignments last year, and that kind of always took precedence. We would always take the 60 or 50% of the total profit that we could maybe get out by holding the deal, holding the note, flipping the property ourselves. We're always taking this shorter profit as a on our wholesale deals than we do on our flips. So it's been hard for me to, I guess, postpone that payday, even though if I were to get these notes created in my own business, over the course of time, they would be better taxed for tax purposes and kind of spreading out the income all at once. But it is what it is. I'm not complaining. I'm just kind of, I guess, shedding light on my own lack of patience there and taking the money now. And or maybe we've gotten lucky long enough. The market's been in an equilibrium. We can continue to sell. So if that changes in the equilibrium, makes it so that it's harder to sell deals. For me, at least, creating the notes is going to be a different story. And I'm speaking about that to my own business, not necessarily to flipping land, where I'm sure that it's actually, what would be the ratio to land deals that you wholesale that someone buys for cash versus the ones where you create a note and hold the mortgage? Are we talking 20%, 60%, 10%?
So for me, you know, where I'm at right now, I just want the passive income. So I do about 99% of owner financing. And oftentimes what will happen is someone will just insist on paying cash or they'll pay their note off early. Now, what will happen occasionally is, let's say that our money's out on this note and we're not going to get our money out for 6 months. And let's say I don't have the capital to do another deal. Well, what I'll do is I will sell 12 months of the cash flow of that note to an investor, and I'll get my money back out on that deal. I'll redeploy it, and then that passive income reverts back to me in 12 months. So we use a platform called TLfolio.com that we actually invest in other people's notes when they are selling on owner financing, and they have a cash flow shortage, and that solves that problem for them. So we really, you know, so that, again, they get two bites of the apple. They get their money out on the deal, and then that passive income reverts back to them in 12 months. And that way they can keep the velocity of money going. But Dan, your situation is a little bit different because you're not a solopreneur. You're not doing this all yourself. You have teams of people. I mean, your cash flow is a business, essentially. So,
correct.
You know, in that sense, it's automated in the same way that our passive income is automated. When you've got five or six different markets, right? If one market starts going south, you're pretty, you know, you're going to be just fine. You're not going to feel it. Like if you're just in one market, right, and you're flipping, then you're going to be a little bit more at risk, I would think. And then if you don't have it, it's like the way that you do it, where the person's doing it all themselves, well, that can get tiring. Right?
Yeah, you're right about that. You're right about that. So, Mark, I have a couple questions here I like to ask my guests who come on the show. I'd like to know, do you have, or who would you consider maybe like the most successful real estate investor or developer? Could be someone, you know, famous publicly. Maybe you don't know them personally. Maybe you do, dead or alive. But the important question that I'm trying to answer really is, why is it you'd say that they're successful? So I'm kind of asking for a definition of success packaged with like a real estate person, if you had one.
Yeah, so my hero is, I call him Uncle Frank, Frank Rolfe. I don't know if have you heard of Frank, or have you had him on the podcast?
Not yet.
All right, so Frank Rolfe, I believe him and his partner, I want to say they're number five largest owners of mobile home parks in the country. And his net worth is, you know, just, you know, approaching the billions, right? So, but what's interesting about him is here's a guy, he lives in a small town in Missouri, and he is very value-based. It's family first for Frank. And, you know, like if you talk to him, he looks at his life and is like a dashboard, right? So money is just one part of that dashboard for him. And for him, it's about, you know, how strong is my relationship with my wife? How strong is my relationship with my kids? You know, am I being a good person to the community? Am I giving back? And so he's really, for me, the model of success, where he's a guy, he loves to work, but he has perspective on life. And he started out in the billboard industry, and, you know, he lived sort of that big lifestyle in Texas, you know, had the multi-million dollar home and did all that. And it was like, these people aren't really fun to be around. They're all stressed out. So he's living a really balanced life, loves his work and gives back. For me, that's sort of really just a tremendous real estate investor. He's great to his partners. And then he teaches people how to invest in mobile home parks and then just, has a great perspective on life as well.
Nice. I love those.
I want my kids to talk to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really did a great job of talking about why it is. And this is, you know, that's kind of the same way that I think, Mark. I can't wait to find Uncle Frank. Hopefully he'll come on the REI Diamond Show and I can get to have a conversation with him at some point.
Yeah, you'll love him. He's great.
So do you have two or three books, life-changing books? Could be real estate, business, mindset, et cetera. Kind of a wide-open questionnaire of any book recommendations you might make.
So I'm constantly reading books. I'm a book junkie. So, you know, here's the books that I think will really move the needle. If you don't have a lot of time, you want to really read a lot of books, or you don't have time to read a lot of books like me. For real estate, The One Thing by Gary Keller is tremendous. I love The 12-Week Year by Brian Moran. I think those two books combined, you'll be just a machine in real estate. And then, you know, as far as like just general being a better human being, The Subtle Art of Not Giving F by Mark Manson is great. I'm reading Deep Work right now by Cal Newport for the second time. I think that's fantastic, especially in today's day and age. Grit is a great book by Angela Duckworth. Man's Search for Meaning is fantastic. Kind of goes along with grit. For Negotiating, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. I really enjoyed that.
That's a good one.
Principles, Life and Work, Ray Dalio. Great book.
Another good one.
And then Ego is the Enemy, Ryan Holiday. You know, this will keep you out of trouble, especially for, you know, the people who probably listen to your podcast and, you know, making all this money doing, you know, deals, keep the ego in check.
True enough.
So I know that that was an overwhelming amount, but.
That was cool. That was a good one. I've got most of them myself. There's a few of them on the list that you mentioned that I'm going to order as soon as we're done here. Mark, if you could go back and share the crown jewel of wisdom, either with your, you know, 18 to 20-year-old self, maybe before you got in real estate, or maybe you have the crown jewel wisdom that you would go back and tell yourself, like right there at the beginning when you were leaving the investment banker world or when you were just discovering the land investment deals, like what would that crown jewel wisdom be?
You know, I would tell myself to read the book, The Power of Now, and really enjoy and really be cognizant of the present moment. Because when I was younger, I was always very future focused and nothing was ever enough. And it was just never enough, never enough, never enough. And I was constantly sort of stressed and just not enjoying life the way that I could have been enjoying it if I just had, you know, this sort of knowledge of, you know, the present moment. And, you know, sort of these principles. I mean, I, you know, not to get too woo woo, but, that's really what I think would have been helpful for me and, really lessened a lot of my anxiety.
Is that, Eckhart Tolle?
Eckhart Tolle, yeah.
That was a good one. I think I read that in 2011. So my story was 2006, got in real estate, never really had a ton of success before that. 2000, you know, and was pretty much broke, but still out there trying to do real estate. I read The Power of Now. I started reading the Bible around that same time, and did some more, you know, work on myself and my own mindset kind of books as opposed to just make money books. And that was one of the key books in the beginning there. that then led to my nice, consistent, wonderful, thank God, the amount of growth that we've seen over the last 6 years or so since 2012. We've had nice, consistent, you know, I couldn't ask for much better. And this is beyond my wildest dreams to have the life that my whole team has today. So that was an interesting book. I haven't had heard that one brought up on our show at all, Mark. And I appreciate that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Being the answer.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, yeah. I've got a book coming out too that tells my story. I had a pretty dramatic story as well, called Dirt Rich. So I'm not sure when the podcast is going to come out, but your listeners can be on the lookout for Dirt Rich as well.
Cool. Sounds good. Great point to wrap up here. Is there anywhere people can go for more information about you, Mark, or would you like to share any contact info?
Yeah, I think the best place to go is thelandgeek.com. Thelandgeek.com. And if they email support@thelandgeek.com and just put in the subject line, Dan Breslin or REI Diamonds, we'll send them for free our $97 passive income launch kit course. So email support@thelandgeek.com, put in the subject line Dan Breslin or REI Diamonds, and we'll send you that course for free. Otherwise, you just go to thelandgeek.com and, we'll get you all the information you need to learn more.
Cool. Sounds good, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on the show. You lived up to the expectation. Thanks for taking this hour to be with our listeners and, you know, answering all the questions and giving us so much valuable, useful information. I know I got a few pages of notes, so thank you for coming on the show, Mark.
Dan, thank you. I'm really, really grateful for you and all you do. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification the next time an episode is released? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, amongst others. Do you have investment capital not already earning above average returns? If you're interested in checking out some upcoming private mortgage opportunities I have available in Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, and the Philadelphia market, go to www.superchargedreturns.com. You'll also receive instant access to the audio on how to create tax-free real estate investments. You can also check out the profitable real estate deals we have at that site as well. Finally, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like discussed on a future episode, or you have a guest suggestion, somebody that you would like me to invite on the show, contact me by clicking on the Contact Dan link at www.reidiamonds.com. And thanks again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.